Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the Fukushima irradiated. Of course, we don't exactly know how irradiated it is because we stopped testing for the radiation like last year or something. But now everybody is really enjoying it, and the prospects are getting a lot brighter because they glow in the dark and have managed to get paid as a part-time job. Standing in for an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Max Egan, and today we're going to be talking about Gaza and Israel and this whole thing. I had said yesterday that basically the movement has this one. I don't really need to give this issue any coverage. There's plenty of people out there doing heaps of work trying to expose this, and I've got lots of other things on my plate. And at the end of the day, I can't ignore this one. I just kind of had a realization. Max, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Vinny. Thanks for asking me on, brother.
Now, you've got personal experience, and you're not only, unlike most people, the vast majority of people who comment on Israel or Gaza and have strong opinions about it one way or another, you've actually been there.
Yeah, I've actually been there on the ground, seen it firsthand, and I had a unique opportunity because I went there completely unrestrained, unrestricted. You know, normally when you go into Gaza, you've got to have minders there, people looking after you, you've got designated plans, you're going to go this and see that, and they're going to take you to certain areas. I just basically entered the country illegally and wandered around for 10 days with a video camera and went all these places I wasn't supposed to go and didn't have anyone looking after me and just kind of rented a unit and hung out for 10 days. So I got to see it from a real perspective on the ground with the people, no one looking after me, just wandering around the country by myself. And it was a great experience. But it gave me a very unique insight that a lot of people don't have when they go to Gaza Strip.
Well, what kind of insight are we talking about? I mean, what was the difference between your experience and those who would, say, for example, not be able to go into the restricted areas? What did you see in these restricted areas that you talk about?
Well, it's just that I got to see the real people on the ground. I didn't get shown any sanitized version of Gaza Strip. I didn't get to, you know, go to specially safe people's places or any of that sort of stuff. I just got to hang out with the people and see what they were really like. And what I found was they're beautiful people. They're just normal people who want a normal life. I went in there and lectured at the university, and the university really fascinated me, actually. I was there, and I saw all these students trapped in this open-air prison, and I wondered why on earth they were bothering to go to university. I mean, what do you hope to achieve by going to a university in Gaza Strip? Are you going to be able to do anything? You can't even get a job here. What are you going to do? And all the people I spoke to said they were going to university mainly because they wanted to learn English, because it's an international language and they wanted to be able to speak and bring the message to the world that they're normal people and want to live like normal people. They're not a country full of terrorists. You know, people are going to so much effort to do this and to let people know that they are just normal people. Now, Gaza Strip is a refugee camp more than anything else. That's what it is. There are no military targets in Gaza Strip. It's a civilian population of refugees. There's a few hundred Hamas in there that are sort of controlling the place. But even if Israel's got a problem with Hamas, most of the people in Gaza are civilians. Hamas is about a few hundred people. And the collective punishment that's being meted out to these people is absolutely disgraceful. It's not acceptable. It's a war crime. You know, I really believe that Israel is an out-of-control, rogue, terrorist nation that is in the process of committing a war crime in the Gaza Strip. This isn't a revenge killing. This is an opportunity to go in and carry out yet more ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people. It's what Israel does best, and that is kill Palestinians for whatever excuse it can find to do so.
Now, you'll have to forgive me for saying this, but part of the reason why I've delayed in trying to cover this issue is because Gaza gets attacked all the time. It's a constant thing, isn't it?
All the time.
It's almost as if...
While I was in there, it got attacked. While I was in there, they were lobbing bombs over the walls. There were rockets landing. There were fishermen being shot off the shore. And Gaza did not respond to any of these attacks. And when Gaza does respond with these small primitive pipes that Hamas make and send over the wall, these are fertilizer-powered pipes that if they land on your house, they put a hole in your roof. They don't blow up. When they do that, then Israel responds with one of the most powerful military forces on earth, and it goes in and it carries out massive acts of ethnic cleansing, and that's what it's doing right now.
And it's not just the fact that they're doing this program. I mean, it's almost like, how long has this conflict been going on? How long have we been trying to expose them without any success, well, any notable success whatsoever? We've gone from the full massive state of Palestine to the full massive state of Israel to just having the West Bank and Gaza, and then it gets further and further and further away from having any kind of independent Palestinian authority or any kind of decent borders or any kind of land for themselves. It just seems like a psychopathic scumbag in charge of a massive military funded by the West just thinks these people are parasites. I want to kill them, but the problem is I can't just out and out exterminate them all right away. I've got to manufacture some big lie so that I can keep continuing to kill them and oppress them on a daily basis to the point where everybody gets bored of hearing about it, so I can continue to do it, and eventually they'll ignore it completely and I can get the final solution done.
Exactly, that's it. I mean, they're called terrorists because they're defending themselves against constant terrorism from Israel. That's it. Israel's a terrorist state. It's carrying out terrorism against the Palestinian people. It's been doing so for 60 years, and if they fight back, they're called terrorists. You're not allowed to fight back. You're not allowed to fight back. We've got to come and bully you. You've got to do everything we say. And if you fight back, because we control the media, we will label you as a terrorist. Israel is a terrorist state. If your government out there is financing Israel and supporting Israel, then you have a terrorist government in your country. Australia is run by terrorists because this government finances Israel. New Zealand sends aid to Israel. New Zealand has a government of psychopathic terrorists. America finances Israel to the tune of $7 billion a day because America is full of psychopathic Zionist terrorists who are controlling the nation, and they are promoting the ethnic cleansing of an entire race of people. That's what's going on. Israel is a rogue terrorist state, and any government that supports it is a criminal government and should be removed by its people, and these psychopathic criminals need to be put in jail. Are you listening to me, people? This
and,
is
can
what
I also,
needs to happen.
Jump in here, Max, because there's two things that you said here that I want to back you up on. Number one, you look up the definition of terrorism in the dictionary. It's a form of government that uses fear and intimidation to keep its own people in line. Uh-huh. And guess who the leader of the New Zealand Zionist Society is? Our current Prime Minister, John Key, who is incidentally a Jewish banker.
what is Zionism? I've got a really nice way of explaining Zionism. Zionism is a mental pathogen. It's a psychic parasite that infects otherwise normal people and turns them into sociopathic morons who believe they are better than other people and that they have the right to steal countries and kill anybody who gets in their way. It's a parasitic mental infection that turns people into deranged psychopaths called Zionists. These people are infected. They have Zionism. They need to be locked up and cured of Zionism. And it's pity there isn't some sort of an antidote we can find for this psychic, mental, parasitic, psychopathic disease called Zionism. That's
I
what
think
Zionism
compassion
is.
Might be one of those cures. You know, try compassion. Have you tried that before? Well, no, actually, I've just tried hate, anger, and killing people and killing children. And apparently, I'm still a sociopath. So maybe I'll try compassion just this once to try and, you know, wean myself off of it.
I don't think they're capable of feeling compassion, Vinny. I think it's a genetic defect that these people have. I think the New Zealand Prime Minister is mentally defective. He has a genetic defect that causes him to be a parasite called Zionist.
Well, what we've seen, and even in mainstream science, is they've found that psychopathy is actually an infectious mind parasite, and it indeed embodies the same characteristics that you're saying are a Zionist. However, it goes across all belief structures. So I think really the central thing here is not Zionism, it's psychopathy in and of itself, using Zionism as a smokescreen to defend itself and allow itself to gain more followers that it needs the energy from in order to kill and maim and destroy, as is its desire.
Yeah, well, that's sort of true. I mean, I think Zionism is a creation of psychopaths. It's a mechanism by where psychopaths can train otherwise normal people to become psychopaths. And once they get infected, we call them Zionists. I mean, I'm very emotional about this, Vinny. We have people being blown up. Mainly the people that have been killed in Gaza are children. There are no military targets in Gaza. It's all civilian. And I'm over it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of soft language. I'm sick of people not calling a spade. I'm sick of watching these governments support this terrorist rogue nation. And these people who control Israel, they don't even have any right to be there. They're not even real Jews. They're European Khazars that usurped the faith, came down here. You go to Israel, the Semitic Jews, the poor Jews in Israel are downtrodden. They are treated like shit, just the same as the Palestinians. These psychopathic scumbags from Europe are the ones who've done all this. And with my investigations my investigation into the Holocaust and all the stuff that gave these cretins the excuse to come down and steal this country, if you look at the Holocaust and you look at World War II, you find out there were 100,000 Khazar Jews in Hitler's army. I would suggest that all of the atrocities that were carried out against the Semitic Jews were carried out by the Khazar Jews just so they could steal Palestine. The whole thing's been a scam. And it's about time the whole world wake up to it and put these people where they belong. And that is not in control of a country and certainly not in control of one of the world's most powerful militaries.
Do you believe that this is an emotional war as much as it is about the facts and evidence?
Absolutely, absolutely. They're trying to rile people up. I mean, they've got me mad. They've got me really mad. No one ever gets me this mad. I don't swear on radio shows. I don't rant and rave the way I have been for the last week. But the gloves have got to come off on this issue, Vinny. And I'm not going to back down. I'm going to name these people for what they are. And it's about time everybody else did. Stop using soft language. Stop being politically correct. Stand up and call a spade, because if you don't, then you're just allowing this genocide to continue. Everybody who stays silent about this is complicit, as far as I'm concerned. And what about the mainstream media? Have you seen the shit the mainstream media is saying about Palestine and about Israel?
I believe they showed a footage of destruction in Gaza and said that it was destruction in Israel that the Gazans caused.
Exactly. They've done it not more than once, and it's not just one network. CNN, ABC, NBC, all of them have been showing footage of blown-up buildings in Gaza and claiming it's damage from Hamas rockets in Israel. It's absolutely blatant disinformation. It's as Chris Geo said, it's a whole new level of fucked up. That's what's happening, you know?
When we're talking about the media and the propaganda side of it, one thing that actually happened to me, I was having a conversation with Dr. Leonard Horowitz and Sherry Kane one time, and they're emotional Zionists, right? So they were yelling at me and screaming at me and what have you about my criticism of the state of Israel. But what was interesting is they brought another guy into the conversation, Nigel somebody. If you search it on my YouTube channel, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to learn. But it's very, very interesting because as the old saying says, the first casualty in war is always the truth. And what I've found is that there's the Israeli population of generalized people. There's a little bit of mind control, there's a little bit of propaganda. They all have to go into the military service or whatever. And those are the ordinary people. And up the top, you've got the psychopaths who control the military and the structures in a hierarchical way. And then over on the Palestinian front, you have the women, children, old men, and things of that nature, non-combatants, people who really, really just want to live in peace and not get frickin' exterminated. And within them, just like every other culture in the entire world, there's a tiny little section of people who want to stir things up, who want to attack and fight and everything like that, and also are willing to use propaganda in order to convince the West of their struggle, regardless of whether or not their struggle's real. And I found that very, very interesting. There was a documentary done by 60 Minutes, I think, called Pallywood. And I'm not sure if this was a propaganda film or not. This is what I'm actually starting to wonder now, whether or not the 60 Minutes was simply doing a propaganda hit piece on the Palestinians. But what they were showing was raw footage of Palestinians shooting up an Israeli position. The Israeli position wasn't shooting back. And then they would fake being hit and fake being carried to ambulances and things of that nature. And then they would give that footage to the international news agencies after it had been edited out. That kind of thing. And of course, this is an emotional issue. And it seems to be an incredibly small minority, both Israeli and Palestinian, who are actually keeping this conflict going. And it's the entirety of the populations of both countries that have to live in anxiety constantly. Even the Israelis, who aren't getting bombed all the time, still live in this constant fear porn anxiety through the Israeli media. I'm just wondering whether or not that perspective is shared by either side.
Well, look, you'll find that most of Israel, I mean, most of Israel are sociopaths. They're trained to be that way through the education system. You've got guys out there on the roof of their cars, you know, eating popcorn, watching the bombs go off in Gaza. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu saying 5 million Israelis are cowering in bunkers. They're not. They're out there with popcorn and beer, watching the babies being blown up. I'd say that film that you saw was probably something made by Mossad. And as for 60 Minutes, well, is there anything 60 Minutes has ever done which hasn't been a propaganda hit piece?
Well, they did a story on Alan Smith here in New Zealand when he got cured of swine flu by vitamin C and criticised the Ministry of Health for trying to restrict his access to it, which cured him.
Oh, well, that might be one story that they've done. I'm surprised.
If anything, it seems to be individual reporters that are working for 60 Minutes, because I spoke to the reporter who did that piece I was referring to, and she said that she got a lot of hassle from her producers and everything after making that.
Well, because she told the truth, of course, you see. They don't want that. That's not what 60 Minutes is about, you know.
Mm.
But the people in Israel don't live in fear of Hamas rockets all the time. The Hamas rockets don't even reach Tel Aviv. For God's sake, these are pipes. These are fertilizer-powered pipes. They're just skyrockets. They come down, put a hole in your roof. You know, they don't hurt. Israel responds with a 500-pound bomb into a residential area, takes out 29 family members in one go. That's what Israel does. Israel does everything it can to find excuses to kill Palestinians. And you'll find that, unfortunately, most of the Israelis simply hate the Palestinians. I've got Israelis here in that I know in town, a computer shop in town. I go in there and say, oh, it's a bummer. You know, they just say, oh, look, if you live next to the Palestinians, you'd want to kill them too. They forget the Palestinians. They're scum. They shouldn't be on earth.
They're really inhuman, the Israelis that I've met on this issue. I mean, we were at a protest. Go ahead.
They're trained to be. See, the Israeli education system is designed to raise people to be sociopaths who are religious supremacist sociopaths. You try to talk about this sort of stuff to someone educated in Israel, and you come up against a brick wall of racist programming. Mm. So you can't really blame them. It's the way they're programmed.
It's not just that, Max. It's not just that. The entire global media network has forced this this programming, as you're talking it, on the consciousness of everybody, particularly Christians. One of my best mates was sitting down with a Christian lady who was known for years and years, and they started talking about Gaza, and she said, oh, those Palestinians are all terrorists and they should all be killed. Right, and exactly. We're talking about somebody who's a truther, who knows 9/11 was an inside job, and that fluoride's bad for you, and everything like that, and is a hardcore Christian who just believes all the Gazans are parasites and need to be exterminated. I mean, you know.
Well, she's not a truther at all. She's a sociopath. She's a brain-dead sociopath that's working for her own agenda and will only accept the truth that she accepts. She's not a truther at all, and she ought to understand it. Jews hate Christians. Jews think Christians are freaking idiots because they think Christ is the son of God. Judah doesn't think Christ is the son of God. He was just a prophet. You people are morons for thinking he's the son of God. They look down on Christians. They don't give a shit about Christians. Now, and really, if you look at the two religions, Islam and Judaism are actually very, very similar. Christianity is the old one out. So how come there is a Judeo-Christian alliance trying to wipe out the Muslims because of the Khazars that influenced both the Judaic society and the Christian society? The Khazars, the Zionist Khazars that have infiltrated all of this society, they've created this alliance between Christians and Jews so they can wipe out Muslims, and then the Judaic system that is left will wipe out the Christians, and then Zion rules the world. That's what it's all about.
I was talking with a very heavily Christian guy who's like literally reading the Bible in front of me the other night, and I tried to convince him, and I think I actually got him to think about it, that religion is a tool. And just like any good tool, it can be used for good or it can be inverted and used for evil. It can be used as a weapon. And I believe that it is probably the most powerful mind control weapon ever developed.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you could put it out there with television, but it is. Religion is an absolute weapon of mind control. It's a weapon of division, and it's programming. It's absolute divisionist programming, the whole thing. You know, but really, I mean, all of the religions basically say the same thing. I mean, they're all religions of faith, if you really, I mean, religions of peace, if you really look at them. All the monotheistic religions, none of them preach war. And yet all everybody does is go and kill everybody else who doesn't believe in their book. So none of the people that are fighting in the name of their religion are actually following their faith. They're all delusional, a lot of them. And it's a program, you know.
I always found that very funny. I'm Christian. I'm all about love and forgiveness. You don't believe in Jesus, I kill you.
Exactly. That's what they do.
It's what I call hypocristians.
But it's like, no, they're okay. It's okay for them to do that. That's part of the Christian program because of the Redeemer complex, you see. It's okay for me to kill you if you don't believe in my faith. That was just anger, and it was the power of God that made me rise up and do that because God wanted me to do that, and it's okay that I killed you because Jesus died for my sins anyway, so it's all good. I'm still going to go to heaven. Yeah. The Redeemer complex. It allows you to go out and rape the planet in the name of God, and it's all good. You're going to go to heaven anyway.
It sounds not entirely dissimilar from the New Age psychobabble about do as thou wilt, and there's no such thing as good or evil. Just sit back and everything will be honky-dory and you never have to suffer.
Yeah, well, the New Age religion was created as a perfect trap, a little grease trap for all of the people who suddenly got disillusioned with the monotheistic faiths. They had to have somewhere to go, and they didn't want them finding out about reality. So they wrapped up about 90% of reality in the New Age religion and then got the last little bit there where they lead you down a blind alley of spiritual narcissism and lock you into a bubble of inaction. That's what the New Age movement is all about. It'll give you 90% of the truth about reality and how reality works, how it's an energetic universe. We're all connected to everything else, all the great stuff that you need to know, only it locks you up in a bubble of ego and narcissism. And you just don't look at anything because where attention goes, energy flows, of course. There's none of this thought that, hey, we could heal the world if we face the problems and fix them and applied all of this positive stuff we've learnt in our New Age philosophies to the world at large that we live in. No, ignore that. It's not about being in the world here. It's about where you're going to go after the world. And if you ignore everything in this world and you keep a nice neutral ground, then you're going to ascend to the fifth dimension. It's a crock. Absolute crock, and it just allows the degradation and destruction and murder and rape and pillaging to continue, and that's what it was for.
Yeah, basically there's that old quote, and I'm sure we've all heard it before: the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And guess what the New Age religion preaches that you should do? Nothing.
Exactly. That's what it's all about, Vinny.
It's about evil triumphing, and it will triumph over your mind and your spirit and your soul if you allow it and ignore reality. Just like Ayn Rand said, regardless of whatever else she said.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I want to do, Vinny. What I want to do at this stage, unfortunately, I've got to go and speak at the Boom Festival in about 2 weeks' time in Portugal. I wish I didn't. I wish that tour was not booked now. I've got a whole bunch of stuff I've got to do through Europe. But I want to organize, if people are willing, I want to organize an international delegation of activists. If you're an activist out there and you are serious about being an activist if you've been out here doing radio shows and you've been making clips and you've been spreading information and you really think you're a truther, well, come with me and let's all go to Gaza Strip. I want to get as many people as I can. I'd like to get 1,000 people or 2,000 people. I'd like to get a delegation of international activists. I will pull the pin on the European tour at any time. As soon as I can get enough people together, I will cancel all dates and I will go straight to Gaza Strip with everybody who wants to come with me. We need to put as many people on the ground from as many countries as possible in Gaza Strip as quickly as we possibly can so we can stop the terrorist forces of Israel from carrying out their program of ethnic cleansing against these people. That's what's happening. It's genocide and ethnic cleansing. I want to go to Gaza and I want you all to come with me. So who's in for it?
Yeah. Hey, that sounds like a really great mission. I'd like to be on there because I've always wanted to test whether or not the casing on my GoPro is explosion proof as they claim that it is.
Well, it'll give you a good opportunity to find out, brother. So let's go to Gaza, Vinny.
Yeah. I'll just like wave at an Israeli tank and say, hey, bro, you know, can you try and shoot this GoPro camera, see if it blows up?
Well, I'll have no problem doing that.
Yeah. Well, I'll just pretend that I'm a Palestinian child and they'll go, shalom. All right. Thank you very much, Max Egan. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you check out the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. It's a listener-supported broadcast, so please go to that homepage and start up a regular donation through PayPal or the KiwiBank account if you happen to be in New Zealand. And if you don't like either of those options, just send me a email and I'll give you my address so you can message us through an envelope or something. We've also got a number of sponsors on the homepage there: Volcania Coffee, the High Tea Cafe, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen and Wagga Wagga, Blue Shield, don't forget that, to protect you from EMF and EMR radio active frequencies and whatnot, which we're all currently bathed in as though it's water, and the Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton and the Range of Illusions by B. Holmes. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Max Egan. TheCrowHouse.com is his website, and we've been talking about Gaza, and we just had, over the break, we're talking about the idea of human shields. Now, I recall the Bundy Ranch, bunch of militia and all of these kind of people there, this face-off with the BLM. And I recall Sheriff Richard Mack talking about putting women and children on the front lines of the militia so that, A1, people don't generally shoot at women and children. That's why they're used as human shields, quote unquote. But number two, were they to actually shoot the women and children, it gets blown right up out into the sky in terms of media coverage because it generates an awful lot of interest. Now, what Max was talking about was taking a group of activists and supporters and things of that nature from Western countries to Gaza to engage in activism there and information gathering and sharing and whatnot. And I suggested, what about the human shield approach? Because I wonder, how willing would the Israeli military be to open fire on crowds of Palestinians if they're surrounded by famous Western activists?
Well, the whole operation's a human shield operation, Vinny. That's the point of going there. It's just by being on the ground in Gaza, you're a human shield. If there's 2,000 international activists in Gaza from all the countries on earth, then if Israel bombs Gaza, they're bombing every country on earth. They're attacking citizens from every nation on earth. This is basically a declaration of world war, which is what Israel will do anyway. I mean, Israel's already said it'll, if anyone ever threatens its existence, it'll wipe out every major city on the planet and take the whole planet down with it. That's how psychopathic these people are. Just Google the Samson option if you doubt that. They've said it on at least three occasions that if Israel's existence is ever threatened, they'll destroy the world. That's how mental and psychopathic and deranged and just moronic these people are. That's how little regard they have for life, and that is the options that they've offered the world. Basically, with that sort of an option, if our existence is ever threatened, we'll take down the world. Basically, what they're saying is we're going to do whatever we want, and we're going to do it to whoever we want, and if anybody ever tries to stop us doing anything we want, we're going to destroy the planet. So you people on the planet, you have a choice. You can do what we say, or we're going to destroy the world. That's what the Samson option says. And everyone says, oh, we must support Israel. The poor Israelis, they're the victims. Bullshit. They're terrorists, they're psychopaths, and this rogue nation needs to be stopped. So I want to get as many people on the ground and put it right in the face of everybody. We're standing up against these criminals. We're standing up against Benjamin Netanyahu and his terrorist forces once and for all, because that's what the IDF is. It's a terrorist organization that is conducting terrorism and ethnic cleansing against any Arab it can find, most especially the children of Palestine whose land they stole to set up their terrorist state. And that's the reality of the situation. So let's get bums on seats and let's all go to Gaza.
It'll take a lot of guts. And also funding as well. That would be another interesting element to go for, because I'm thinking about, in terms of financing, you know why the New World Order agendas always get pulled off all the time, and they don't really seem to have any problems committing scumbaggery and bombing people for no reason, and they never get caught and they never go to jail? It's because they've got shockingly large amounts of coin. And isn't it interesting how the people who are really, really good don't really have a whole lot of coin, but the people who are just willing to commit fraud and scumbaggery and sell arms to terrorists, they're loaded and they're living the life of luxury.
Well, that's because they're the ones who run the money system, mate. They're the ones who introduced the whole slavery system, the whole debt slavery system. They just print money whenever they want it. They just put digits on the screen and there they go. And they make sure the rest of the world is all caught up in a system of perpetual self-generating debt. So they don't really have a chance to even get their head above water to even notice that things may be a little bit fucked up. You know, they're just not even seeing it. They're just kept on the treadmill so they don't notice. But the people who run it all print the money. So that's the thing. You know, the Zionists print the money, they control the media, and they set up Israel, which is basically a rogue terrorist nation, a weapons generation area, and a instability mechanism controlled by the Rothschild family, controlled by the elite. It's just a Zionist destabilization mechanism. That's all Israel is. It's got nothing to do with a home for the Jewish people or any of this sort of crap. It's about taking over the world. Zionism and these psychopaths, these morons, this whole corrupt banking cartel that's been destroying the world for the last 700 years or longer. It's just about, you know, consolidating their control. That's what Israel's for.
Do you believe that there actually should be a state of Israel, or all the Jews should be kicked out and it should be given back to the Palestinians?
Look, the Jews lived in Israel. The Holy Land of Israel existed within the boundaries of Palestine for thousands of years, and the Jews lived there in peace for thousands of years. There's no reason for that to have ever changed. The state of Israel, as it is an illegitimate terrorist state that has no right to be there. The people that are running it are not even Semitic Jews from the area. They're Europeans that were given the area by the United Nations. And the United Nations giving Palestine to a bunch of European Jews is like Ireland giving France to Brazil. You can't do that, you know what I mean? It doesn't work. You can't do it. It's like China giving Paraguay to Australia. You can't give someone else's country away. It's ridiculous. And they displaced 7 million people in doing so. It's an illegitimate rogue terrorist state run by people who have no claim to the land, and it's supported by a criminal cabal that has taken over all Western governments. That's what Israel is. Basically, like I said, it's a weapons lab and destabilization mechanism run by the Rothschilds. That's what it is.
When people say... Can I make another point here? The socialism element attaches itself to the Gaza fight for freedom quite solidly. I find this very ironic, because Gaza's about protecting human life and about protecting human freedom and dignity. And yet what the socialists propose is more or less a UN global world government and global extermination. So why is it that people support the struggle of the Palestinians with such remarkable compassion and yet also support the global extermination and enslavement of the world through the UN at the same time?
Because they're deranged retards. I mean, they're mental retards. If you're into an ism, there's something seriously wrong with you. I don't do isms. I don't do ismism. You know, I think self-autonomy is the way to go. I think that we all have the capacity to govern ourselves. All it takes is a thing called respect. That's what a lot of people seem to miss. See, all these socialists and all these guys, they think economics is real. They think the money system is actually real. They think we need money. So they've based everything from a completely skewed and deranged perspective from the beginning. And if you're going to put together any type of governmental system that's going to control anything by a cash flow, then you're fucked up from the beginning. You don't need any of this stuff. Forget it. You know, I don't need anyone controlling any aspect of my life. I live my life in a respectful manner and I work to help people around me. And that's the way I live my life. And I don't need anyone controlling it. You know, I don't think we need any of these isms, mate. But people like socialists, they'll latch onto this because it's a human rights thing and they can use it as a springboard with which to promote their own political ideology because they think, oh, look, they can wrap it up in a package of caring and human rights. But it's all just a smokescreen. These are just sociopaths using the suffering of others to promote their own ideologies. It always is. That's all an ism ever is, you know.
A socialismopath.
Yeah, that works, you know. But so I just don't do isms, mate. Ism, I call it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a great quote a couple of years ago. Ism everywhere, but no one stops to think. Yeah, and ultimately, that's it's funny you should mention this because I was just thinking about this morning before coming on the radio with you, Max. The ability to think for yourself is something that individualists crave and promote. The inability to think for yourself and the willingness to force other people to not be able to is what socialists desire.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. I mean, why would you want to control anybody else's thoughts? I mean, if people are educated in reality and what reality is and what they are, see, they don't have these bad thoughts. They don't want to do bad things unless they're just a psychopath or a sociopath just by birth, which does happen. But these people, if you've got a society that's respectful, I mean, all of these barriers and borders break down, Vinny. You don't need anybody looking after you. I think one of the main problems that we've had is that the education system that we've got, the training that we receive, teaches us to forget ourselves, or it never even allows us to know ourselves, to realize what we are, and to realize what's really there inside us. It externalizes everything. It trains us into language and numbers, which are not natural things. You know, the language that we've got, like the writing and all of this sort of stuff, the English language, is not natural. You know, it's a program, the whole lot's a program. They teach us spell, the whole thing, you know, the whole Illuminati psychopathic meme that is this society, really. I mean, it's something that we're taught. It's not something that's natural to us at all. It's a reality we're taught to believe is real. I think with a proper education system, if people were taught truly what they really are and knew what they were, it's an amazing thing, man. Once you really find out what you are and what you're capable of, and the mere amazement of you being here. I mean, it's incredible that we're even here having this conversation, really. It's absolutely freaking amazing.
Yeah, especially since Microsoft bought Skype. Keep going.
Yeah, but anyway, just the fact that we're here and we can verbalize speech and we can see the world around us, the fact that we're alive, this is incredible, Vinny. This planet that we've got, the opportunity we've got here. You know, we're never taught any of this. We're taught numbers and we're taught language and we're taught this. We're taught to be a functional little cog in the big machine. We're never taught what we are. And this is what you get when that happens. People forget who they are. They never know themselves, so they never know how to respect themselves. How can they respect the world if they don't even know themselves? And the only reason you don't respect yourself is because you don't know yourself. And if you do know yourself, you do respect yourself. And it isn't until you do that you know how to respect others properly. And if you don't respect others properly, it's because you don't respect yourself, because you don't know yourself, because you never knew it was there.
Yeah.
The education system didn't let you find it. You know? You've got to see how we've been programmed into this, Vinny. You know, and all of this is an opportunity. What Gaza is providing us with is an opportunity to wake up for ourselves. It's right here in your face, people. Look at this. This is where it's going. The way of Palestine will be the way of the world if you don't pay attention to this issue. And that's what this is, Vinny. It's one of the greatest opportunities we've ever had. So let's do it. Let's pay attention. You know?
Yeah. And I don't see why people don't get it. I mean, this is the epitome of the scene from The Lion King where he goes, "Remember who you are, Simba. All right, go back and become king and depose the Scarface scumbag who's taken over the pride." You know what I'm saying?
I never watched The Lion King, Vinny. I couldn't subject myself to that. So I'll just take your word for it.
All right. Well, quick synopsis. Basically, royal family, daddy king gets assassinated by brother prince, and then he steals all the power and then kicks out all the legitimate rulers, and then winds up having a revelation through his daddy lion talking to him through the clouds to go back and set things right. That's pretty much the synopsis of the entire film. You don't need to see it now, bro.
Well, thanks for sharing with me. My life feels much more complete.
Yeah. And on top of that, it's an allegory for pretty much every single royal family on the earth, isn't it? You know? How did I become royalty? Well, I killed a guy who was royalty and took his place. Oh, okay. Does that sound legitimate to you? Totally. All right. Sussed.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? We've got a hell of a way of doing things, haven't we, Vinny?
Well, I don't think we have a hell of a lot of deal with it. In fact, I've been arguing with myself about whether or not there really is a we. Just kind of like, there's no such thing as a forest, there's only trees, you know? You can touch a tree, but you can't touch a forest. There is no we, there's only really me, what I can do, and etc. However, there's interconnections, sort of like, I don't know if you ever played with Lego as a kid, but I did. I used to play with it a lot. And I think of the global consciousness, socializing, doing shows like this and everything, as more or less two different people with two different sets of Lego trying to see what they can build together.
Okay. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Maybe a little bit left brain there, Vinny, but I can see where you're going.
And the other element is that you can't actually create something so amazing by yourself that nobody else with a team of people could do it. There's a proviso on that, though, because individuals are so exceptional that they can literally do something that nobody else in the entire race can even understand, let alone replicate sometimes.
Well, everybody has the capability of doing that just by being you. That's something that nobody else can understand or replicate, and that's the beauty of you, and that's the perfection of you, and that's the uniqueness of you. That's why you're perfect. That's why everybody is perfect, because they're perfect at being themselves, which is what they came here to be, obviously, because that's who they are. And they're here to experience the world from that perspective. It's just that they're taught that they're not perfect. They've got to measure themselves up to all these bullshit parameters that are given to them by the system, so they never get to experience themselves. That's the thing. And we can do it collectively, because we have to do it collectively, and that's what all this is. It's an opportunity for that, because really, there's only one of us here experiencing the world from 7 billion different perspectives. And that's why this ultimate evil has to exist in the world. Terrorist forces like Israel and all the evil that they do has to exist in the world, because then it gives us the opportunity to notice it. We would never have the opportunity to do the right thing if we didn't have the opportunity to do the wrong thing. So it has to be there. But it's what we do with that time. It's what we do with all of this information. It's about how we remember ourselves, Vinny. And discover the perfection of ourselves, because you're right. We all have something fantastic that we can do that nobody else can, and that is to be ourselves. That's the simplicity of it. It's ridiculous that people feel bad about themselves. It's ridiculous that people look down on themselves because they don't look a certain way or dress a certain way or haven't reached a certain rung on a certain ladder, because it's all bullshit. It's all fiction. It's all external parameters, and it's all been put there so that they forget themselves and never discover their own perfection, because as soon as they find it, they can apply it to the world around them, and the world could change in a single day. That's the reality.
It's kind of like goalposts and hoops, you know, and hierarchies. Oh, you got to jump through this hoop. You got to get the ball over this goalpost. And then as soon as you get the ball over that goalpost, they move the goalpost. And it's and that kind of thing. And it's always constantly changing. What does everybody want me to be? Well, here's the thing. Everybody's opinion of what you should be doesn't freaking matter.
Exactly. It's what you should be. It's what you are. It's not even what you should be. What are you? You ever think about that? What are you? What really are you? Not physically, but what are you? What is this frequency that is you? This frequency of consciousness. What really are you, and what are you here to do? What do you feel? What is your expression? What is your art? What is the art of the expression of that consciousness? How does it express its art? What can it improve in this world? What experience can it add to the world? What information can it garner from its experience here so I can take it back to source, you know? It's an incredible experiment that we're all involved in, Vinny. And all of these atrocities in the planet are giving us the opportunity to wake up to ourselves. And I think it's high time we did. And that's why I've not been pulling any punches on these last shows. I'm just going to call a spade a spade. This whole incursion into Gaza has been a huge wake-up call for me. I'm not going to be so calm anymore. I'll still be reasonably calm. I mean, I'll probably swear for the next week. I mean, I've been swearing for the last week. I'm just hell angry. I really, really am. This has really got my blood boiling. But it's caused me to shift my perspective. It's caused me to realize that I can't take a backward step. I can't be politically correct. I can't be polite. I can't not call a spade anymore. I can't use soft language anymore. I'm not interested in trying to promote my work or promote my image or to be anything or to be a guru or to become famous or to be a filmmaker or to be anything. I want to change the world. I want to change the perspective that people have. I want people to rediscover themselves. And all I can do is lead by example in what I do. And that's what I'm going to do from now on. Every step I take, I'm going to be absolutely defiant in that step. I will not take a backward step to anyone. I will call a spade, and I will change the world if the people will help me do it.
My question about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, how much comedy is there involved? There's none, is there? Yeah. People are incapable of making jokes about it. They're incapable of making light of it. It's either hard out, one side or the other. I hate the Israelis because they're a terrorist state and they're killing people, or I hate Palestinians and I like killing them.
I don't hate Israelis. Israel is a terrorist state, but I don't hate Israelis. I don't do anything I do.
Sorry. Israeli state, rather.
But I want to say, I don't do anything. I don't even hate the Israeli state. I can see it for what it is, but I don't hate it. It's not worthy of that emotion from me. Every single thing I say, every word I say against Benjamin Netanyahu, when I call him a psychopath and a cretin, when I tell him I want to... All of this sort of stuff I say from love of life, love for people, love for children, love for the humankind, love for decency, love for what is right. I will not stand by and watch people being killed by psychopaths. But I won't hate them. I won't dare give them that energy. They will not convince me to hate them. I will not do anything from hatred. But I will in the name of love, absolutely, if I have to. You know, if it comes to that point where I have to defend myself or defend a child or something like that, I will not take a backward step to someone who is full of hate, but I won't be hating them. I'll be pitying them. And I pity Benjamin Netanyahu for being the psychopathic moron that he is. I pity all the people in Israel who are sitting there eating popcorn and watching babies blown up. But I don't do anything I do from hatred, Vinny. I do it out of love for life and love for people and love for humankind. I do it out of desperation. I do it out of empathy. I do not hate. I refuse to hate. I won't give them that. They can't take that from me. They won't reduce me to that. Not ever. Not ever.
Well, it's a good response there, because what I found, interestingly, is this is exactly what happens to people in general, is that they'll go into something to oppose hate in and of itself. In the process, they get infected by it, kind of like trying to fight a disease.
Exactly. That's what they want, you know. That's what they want. See, it's like Dante said, if you stare into hell, hell will stare back to you. You will become hell. It's the same thing. If you scream at someone who hates enough, you will end up hating them, you know. I don't do it out of hate, though, Vinny. I do it out of desperation. I do it because I simply can't remain quiet anymore. I can't stand by and be passive watching the world being destroyed around me, watching people that I love being killed by terrorists. I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Do you feel a sense of anxiety, kind of like a, almost like a, for me, it's sort of like a pressure on my throat. It seems like very deeply held rage that one might call hate, but it's not exactly. I think it's kind of justified. Sort of like if you see a child being raped in front of you by a scumbag and you beat him to death.
Mate, I feel energetic strings attached to all of this. I really do. I feel it energetically. I went to sleep last night. I actually slept really solidly, and it was during the ceasefire. And, you know, when that ground invasion started, I woke up like a bullet. It's like someone put a bullet in my chest. I woke up and went, bah, what the hell is that? And I looked online, and they just started the ground invasion. It was like an energetic connection, and I must have slept during the 6-hour ceasefire. That's the first decent sleep I've had in a week. was when the fighting stopped in Gaza. So this is charging the field. This whole thing is charging the field. It's like a big black magic ceremony, mate. There's this huge blood sacrifice going on. And there's people enraged around the world from it, mate.
Wait a second, Max. A couple of days, it might have been a week or so before this happened, there was a whole bunch of truthers putting up posts all over Facebook and everything, saying talking about a ritual. There's a certain date or something like that where it's an annual blood sacrifice ritual or something of that nature. Have you seen any of these posts?
No, I haven't, but it wouldn't surprise
me. And then right after that, you know, alleged blood ritual, everybody was conspiracy theorists saying was going to happen, Gaza gets invaded and a whole bunch of kids get sacrificed to the dark gods.
Yeah, it's all blood sacrifice, mate. You can feel it in the air. You can absolutely feel it, Vinny. I mean, I can. For me to have woken up like that and oh, gee, what's going on, you know? I mean, I felt actually calm. I was lying in bed and I was thinking, I actually felt calm for the first time in a week, you know? And then when I woke up and it was, I looked straight online and bang, ground invasion commenced a few minutes ago. I thought, well, that's exactly when I woke up, you know. So it's an energetic connection, you know. There's all this weird energy stuff going on, Vinny.
It's freaking really angels and demons out there, eh?
Yeah, but, mate, I'd really like to get a bunch of people, whoever wants to come with me to Gaza. I mean, I don't know what I do. I open a Facebook page or something and try to get people to sign up and try to organise and coordinate and get enough people in there. We need to create an international media attention for it. We need a huge media coverage of a delegation going straight into Gaza, straight into this war zone, just to stop the Israeli attack, you know. That's probably all it will take, and I'm happy to go and do it. Well, not happy, but I'm willing to go and do it. You know, I'll be there with bells on if I can get people to come with me.
I thought it'd be very interesting to get a support Gaza media alliance or something of that nature, just aggregate all the different articles and truth that's going on inside that region for people to publish in an unbiased, unrestricted way, or at least point them in the right direction of all these different commentators and what. I don't know. I'm just spitfiring ideas. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show. This is a listener-supported broadcast, so please go to TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. Winter's been incredibly tough, ladies and gentlemen, and finances are incredibly tight, which causes a lot of anxiety, not anywhere near as much as being bombed in Gaza, but still a little bit, and it would be very nice and lovely if anybody would be feeling generous enough, considering I try and help get the truth out about all sorts of stuff. It's just become a job for me, all right? Exposing scumbaggery is a full-time job, and I'm the only person in New Zealand who has this job, okay? If you want me to continue being able to do it, I'll keep continuing to do it with or without your help. Let me make that clear. I didn't need your help to start, but to operate at this level and getting out there and simply surviving at this moment, I do really much need your support, because we had a PayPal incident that happened earlier on in the year, who cancelled one PayPal account, which lost like about 45-50 subscribers who were doing like $10, $20 or $5 a month donations. So my income was pretty much cut in half. Anybody listening who was one of those subscribers, you can now resubscribe with the PayPal buttons on the homepage, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining me now is Robert Sullivan. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinny. Great to be with you here on your show, Guerrilla Media. Great to be here. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's just the Vinny Eastwood Show. I'm sort of like in that Guerrilla Media thing on a back burner because some sociopath stole it. And the problem is you can't steal back from sociopaths. You just kind of have to let him have it. Sort of like an angry dog that's diseased with rabies takes a bone off you. You're like, I don't want that back. But otherwise that, would you be able to tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, Robert? Because I've had a look at your profile, and it looks like you're Freemasonry up to the gills.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a Freemason here in Baltimore, Maryland, and I wrote a book that came out 2 years ago, almost to the month, called The Royal Arch of Enoch, The Impact of Masonic Ritual, Philosophy, and Symbolism. The book's out now. It's on Kindle. It's on Nook. You can go get the paperback copies if you want. And what the thrust of the book is, in a nutshell, to condense this really, is that there's one particular high-degree ritual known as the Royal Arch of Enoch is incorporating elements of one Enoch, or the Book of Enoch, which was lost to Western civilization from around 2-3 Common Era until 1773. And even then, when it was brought back to Europe, it remained untranslated in the basement of the Bodleian Library at Oxford University. Yet my book documents that when this higher degree ritual was being developed in Paris, France, in the 1740s, 1750s, it was incorporating elements of the Book of Enoch. So it was a historical anomaly going on. And I just published, in fact, it is out right now, it actually just came out today, is the second book I just got out, called Cinema Symbolism, A Guide to Esoteric Imagery in Popular Movies. And this was kind of an extension of the last chapter of the Royal Arch of Enoch, where in that I talked about some of the concealed, you know, solar, Masonic, Enochian themes in movies such as Da Vinci Code, National Treasure, being there, things like that. And in this, I went more into, again, some of the numerological occult symbols in movies like The Matrix and Back to the Future and Star Wars and all that good stuff. And that book's out right now. It just came out on Kindle, Nook, paperback. If you want it, you just go to my website, robertwsullivaniv.com, and you click the link there, and you can go get it.
And how long's it exactly been out, and what kind of, have you had any backlash from it?
For the Royal Arch of Enoch? No, the Royal Arch of Enoch, that came out in August of 2012. I didn't really get any backlash. There has been some criticism of it. You know, you can't do anything in life without there being a naysayer.
Well, of course.
Yeah, but that's okay. I kind of knew that was coming. No, it's a historical book. It delves into Masonic philosophy, symbolism. I get into some of the more controversial aspects of it, you know, some of the, you know, the occult template of Washington, D.C., things like that. But by and large, no, I haven't caught any backlash from it. But if you're a Freemason, what they really don't want, you know, if you talk about the history and the philosophy and the symbols and stuff like that, that's fair game. What they don't want you talking about is revealing, like, the handshakes, the tokens, the passwords, the pass grips, signs of recognition. That's the sort of stuff they really frown upon. And I didn't do that in the book. The only time that, if I had to mention a password, or not even a password, like a secret name or something like that, I just wrote the initials down. The truth be told, a simple Google search will reveal all this stuff anyway. But they just really don't want you writing it down. But no, I haven't had any men in black show up on my doorstep yet.
No men in Masonic rings either. Yeah. Well, it's the question, though, exactly what are the implications of this book? What are the deeper discoveries, things that people can actually learn and take away from it?
Yeah, I think the deeper implications are, number one, is that it presents this historical anomaly for the first time, that in a nutshell, this higher degree ritual is incorporating the Book of Elements and philosophies and things like that from the Book of Enoch, when it shouldn't have. Like I said, mainstream history will tell you the Book of Enoch was lost to Western civilization from 2-3 Common Era up to basically 1821. But clearly someone had a copy of this, or at least a detailed outline of it, of some effect. I've been asked before where a possible source of this book may have been. The Vatican archives scream off the page to me, as does Dr. John Dee, who was Queen Elizabeth's court astrologer, and there's reasons why I point to Dee. But the deeper implications of is the ritual. It's in the Scottish Rite. It's the 13th of the Scottish Rite. It's the 7th in the York Rite. It's really one of the more important rituals within Freemasonry, because it documents the recovery of what's called the Tetragrammaton, which is just a real fancy way of me saying the name of God, which is the lost word of a master Mason. This is the word that is lost in the Blue Lodge, but is recovered in this higher degree ceremonial. And what the book presents on a deeper level is it's a lot of the philosophies and symbols and lessons and emblems coming out of this particular degree that are really being incorporated into a lot of the symbolic architecture going on in Washington, D.C. You'll see it in Baltimore, Maryland, which is where I am. The Erie Canal in New York State was dedicated in a Royal Arch ceremonial. It was really one of the, at the time, prior to the formulation of the York and Scottish Rites, it was really the premier highest degree in the United States. I mean, this breaks off a little bit from England. Their tradition's a little bit different. But the book really presents this anomaly and then presents the historical importance of this degree in things such as the formulation of the United States.
So it's actually kind of like a, I don't know, in terms of Freemasonry, in a lot of ways, a founding document sort of thing, like in that kind of realm of importance?
Well, it's like I said, the book talks about, you know, the development of the ritual and some of the symbols and why it's important both on the Blue Lodge and the high degree level. And then I get into, you know, some of the, you know, the architecture that you'll find in D.C., which, you know, incorporates a lot of solar imagery. This comes both out of the higher degrees, the Royal Arch Ceremonial, and the Blue Lodge as well. But the book is 700 pages long, and it really, you know, what I like to think of with the book is it really gives you a history lesson of Freemasonry. Also, it just doesn't start off talking about this anomaly. I get into the development of Freemasonry, how the high degrees are different from the Blue Lodge system on a philosophical level, why this degree is so important. I talk about the elements from the Book of Enoch that are being incorporated into the degree, which shouldn't actually be happening. And I get into a lot of the occult themes, you know, the symbolism going on in both Blue Lodge and the higher degrees, and, you know, how this is being carried on and carried forward in some of the, you know, Masonic architecture and templates of things like Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, which is where I am, the Erie Canal. You'll find it in colleges and universities as well. And the book documents all this. What I was really excited about was that a lot of the material in the book is brand new. It's fresh material. It's not rehash. You're going to find a lot of new information in this book. And I like to think that I took on a lot of subject matters that a lot of Freemasons kind of, you know, dance around a little bit. Subjects like the Illuminati. I talk about the Illuminati influence in the development of the United States. I talk about the Jesuit influence, things like that. I get into some anti-Masonic, you know, aspects to be fair and balanced about this. So, you know, the book's been out. It's 700 pages. And like I said, it's in Kindle Nook. You can get the ebooks for $10.
Do you have a central website of your own where people can go purchase it or click on a banner or something? Or is it just you have to search the book?
No. The answer is yes, Vinny. If you go to my website, which is www, and it's just my name, which is Robert W. Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N, and then I'm the fourth, so it's I-V. It's the letter I, the letter V.com, Robert W. Sullivan, I-V.com. If you go to the page, you'll see a banner right away where you can click to purchase the Royal Arch of Enoch book and the Cinema Symbolism book, which has just been released.
Now, in terms of Freemasonry, you said there's a bit of anti-Freemasonry stuff in there in terms of balance. And I've been speaking to a number of guys who are friends of mine who are also Masons, and some of them believe that there's a infiltration, sort of like a, mostly just done by the Scottish Rite, really, that's just sort of taking over Freemasonry in general. So every single time that the History Channel goes and mentions anything about Freemasonry, they've always got somebody from the Scottish Rite of the 33rd degree, given all the things, like we're the only branch of Freemasonry around. You ever hear about that kind of stuff?
No. The Scottish Rite... I am a member of the Scottish Rite. I'm a 32nd. When you join the Blue Lodge, you can join both degrees. You can join the York Rite or the Scottish Rite. You can join neither of them. You can join both of them. I guess for the History Channel, a lot of the I don't know why they go to the Scottish Rite guys. I could tell you a lot of the Scottish Rite guys are also York Rite guys. You in the York Rite as well. A lot of those guys you see on the History Channel. I don't know if there's any sort of infiltration going on. But the York Rite and the Scottish Rite, are in a nutshell basically both born out of the same things. They're different, of course, but they do parallel each other. The original high degree system was called the Rites of Perfection. This is what incorporated this original Royal Arch of Enoch degree. This was being developed, and I take this one full-fledged. This was being developed in Paris, France in the 1740s, 1750s by the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, as part of the Counter-Reformation. And these 25 degrees are midwifed into the United States, and it becomes a man named Henry Franken sets up what's called the Lodge of Perfection in Albany, New York in 1767. And it's these 25 degrees that become what is ultimately the Scottish Rite. And in 1783, he publishes a manuscript detailing these rituals. And this is what Thomas Smith Webb, who is the godfather of the York Rite, he sort of picks apart to create the York Rite. Some of the degrees have the same, you know, there's a Royal Arch ceremony on the York Rite. I don't know of any, you know, Scottish Rite takeover or anything like that. Like I said, you can certainly...
Because I always thought that a lot of these Scottish Rite rituals came from, what was his name, Albert Pike or something.
No, this is totally 100% false. Albert, the Scottish Rite is set up in Charleston's, the Mother Supreme Council of the World of the Scottish Rite is set up in Charleston, South Carolina in 1801. Albert Pike is born in 1807. So I'm still waiting for someone to explain 6 years before he's born how Albert Pike is setting up the Scottish Rite. He becomes Grand Sovereign Commander, in 1859, and he remains that position, to his death. He is definitely a bit of a controversial figure.
Like before he was born, like you said that Scottish Rite was happened 7 years before he was born. Was
right.
It established as having 33 degrees that 7 years before he was born, or did that happen and develop later on?
No, it is established with the degrees 4 through 32 and the honorary being the 33rd. This is established well before Pike comes along.
Where did they get the rituals for each degree to come up with that? Because Freemasonry had been around for a long time before the Scottish Rite popped up in that time frame, didn't it?
Well, Freemasonry, the you have two competing things going on. You have the Blue Lodge. This is degrees 1, 2, and 3. Of Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft, and Master Mason. That's born as a modern institution in England in 1717 on June 24th. That's degrees 1, 2, and 3. The higher degree system, what ultimately becomes the Scottish Rite, is born in Paris, France, in the 1740s, what's called the Rite of Perfection. These are 25 degrees that are being developed by the Jesuits to destroy the Church of England, for lack of a better word, because Freemasonic is born in England. The Jesuits have always wanted to destroy England ever since the founding of, you know, the Protestant Reformation and the foundation of the Church of England by Henry VIII. The Jesuits are also using these degrees as part of the Counter-Reformation. This is the destruction of the Western Church, of the Protestant Church. This is what they were charged with. The Jesuits were master mystics, Athanatus Kircher. These guys were the magicians of Europe. And they're developing these degrees to basically as subterfuge to undermine England and its monarchy. In a nutshell, they're using it to try to restore the Catholic side of the Stuarts back to the throne of England. The degrees, these 25 degrees, are midwifed into the United States slowly. The man mainly responsible for this is a guy named Etienne or Stephen Morin. And this gets set up in, they're called the Rites of Perfection. And this gets set up in Albany, New York, by Henry Franken in the 1760s. And it is from this Rite of Perfection that becomes the meat and bones of the Scottish Rite. This is degrees 4 through 32. This is set up in Charleston, South Carolina, on May 31st of 1801. With the 33rd degree being honorary. Pike is born 6-7 years later. He is responsible for rewriting and reorganizing some of the degrees, but Albert Pike is not in any way, shape, or form the creator of the Scottish Rite.
I wasn't 100% sure on that. Thank you for clearing it up. The other element is I wanted to talk to you about is there's two types of Freemasonry as far as I've seen is those who use the teachings and the wisdom and the environment to advance themselves as people and walk right with the higher power, whatever that might be, according to your belief structure, and the other one is basically infiltration by psychopaths who actually use the fact that it's got secrecy and has people within it that are influential in order to merely enrich and empower themselves, not walking right with the higher power that they believe in.
Well, I think you can find that, I suppose.
Like in your personal experience, you ever known anybody in a lodge who's like just a bit of a scumbag, not naming any names?
No, I have never met any scumbags, but I can tell you right now that, even in my time, people have been suspended or thrown out of a lodge. It's bound to happen. I mean, when you have a fraternity as large as Freemasonry is, when people are brought into it, by and large, there's no criminal background check given. It's a lot of, we'll just take your word for it, although I have been told now that some Grand Lodges are actually screening criminal background checks for incoming members. This wasn't the case when I joined it. But, I mean, I know for a fact people have been thrown out of it, people who lie to get into it, and then it's subsubsequently discovered have a rap sheet a mile long or something. That would be no good, of course. And then someone gets arrested for a criminal offense. Yeah, I mean, your history, you're gone. You have infiltration of Freemasonry in the, and I've been asked this before by this group called the Illuminati. This definitely happened. You will see elements of Illuminism in the early stages of the country. However, I would not call these people. The guy in the United States who is really behind this is a man named DeWitt Clinton. I wouldn't call him a psychopath or anything like that. He was basically, and I'm just condensing the answer here, he was using Freemasonry to influence political and socio-economic change over state lines. And you're right, there was some secrecy done with this, but Clinton would have, to Clinton, this would have been for positive change, not for some sort of secret clandestine, government takeover or anything like that. However, and I've talked about this, in the book, when the William Morgan affair came along, which was this real big anti-Masonic movement, this kind of got exposed and Masonry was definitely viewed in a negative light. And I think this is where a lot of this stuff comes from, where the Masons are, working behind the scenes in government to take over. It's really remnants of the William Morgan affair. And you did have Masons doing this with, DeWitt Clinton and things like that, who was clearly formulating policy and using Masonry as a vehicle to implement political and social and economic change. But again, to Clinton, this would have been a positive, not a negative. But again, if a person wants to view it as negative, that's certainly something that, a subjective viewpoint that a person could have.
I agree. And it's like, what I really don't like is people who go carte blanche and just go, all Freemasons are corrupt, etc. That kind of stuff is too freaking simplistic, honestly, at the end of the day. And I hate those people. They annoy me because they're not actually allowing for individual differences of opinion and things of that nature. In New Zealand, I think we have a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason here by the name of John Banks, who is the former mayor of Auckland, our largest city, and the former coalition party leader for the current government. And incidentally, the prime minister, the current prime minister, is also a 32nd degree Freemason. And the John Banks has just been convicted of electoral fraud. And what I found was very interesting about this is, of course, it probably has nothing to do with Freemasonry whatsoever. It might just be a coincidence or something of that nature. But
right,
the three most powerful men in New Zealand are 32nd degree Freemasons, all of them of the Scottish Rite. And
sure,
they've all been implicated in massive corruption, and there's only one of them so far that's actually been privately prosecuted and obtained a conviction, and the second one, the Prime Minister, is currently been going after. So what I was wondering is, what is the responsibility for behavior outside of the lodge? What kind of rules are masons supposed to abide by? And if they're not abiding by those behaviors, what kind of consequences do they expect?
Well, the truth is that outside the lodge, and inside the lodge, you're supposed to act like a law-abiding citizen. You know, and this is taught in the Blue Lodge, and you know from the get-go. And I should add, I think I mentioned this earlier, that in order to join the higher degree bodies, you have to be a Blue Lodge Freemason. And again, you know, you're taught and instructed to be morally upright, to not engage in any sort of, I'm just paraphrasing, you know, any sort of chicanery or monkey shines, you know, and you're supposed to just be a law-abiding citizen. That's the standard you're held to. Naturally, depending on the offense, and if you are ultimately convicted of it, and again, it, you know, I mean, if it's a speeding ticket, no one's going to care. But I mean, if it's electoral fraud, my gut reaction would be you would probably, at least on a Blue Lodge level, and of course this would affect your membership in the higher degrees, you would be thrown out. The way it would work is technically with masonry, it's like you can't unring a bell, but what you would do is you would just be suspended from the lodge. You would technically be tossed out. You wouldn't be able to ever attend, you wouldn't be able to hold yourself out as a Freemason anymore. So that would be the Masonic consequences. Whatever the law would be is, you know, whatever that person, you know, whatever the charges would be, I guess you would just face in a criminal or civil court or something.
Sure. I was just wondering, like, would they just not make it public, like not publicly kick Banks out of the Brotherhood, because then it would make them, it would basically just say, hey, Banks is a Mason, and then start up a whole bloody anti-PR campaign sort of thing, maybe a bit of a fear of that, publicly reprimanding high-level corrupt people who just happen to be Masons?
It would probably, you know, that's a good point, because like you said, it's kind of like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If they publicize it, it's going to be, oh, well, look at this, you know, how many other guys are corrupt or, you know, or in this thing. But of course, if they kept it quiet, then it's, you see, yeah, look, they're covering it up. They don't want to really do anything. You know, I don't know what sort of, my guess it would be, would probably just be a byline somewhere in a local newspaper. You know, it could be handled internally where he just gets a letter in the mail from the Blue Lodge. And a lot of times, you know, the lodge wouldn't act until, you know, there was some sort of judicial judgment, you know, handed down or anything like that. I mean, if the guy was ultimately exonerated, probably nothing would happen. But, you'd probably just have to wait and see until some sort of, judgment was handed down by the court.
Well, see, that's the difficulty, and I don't know about you, but this is why I don't join organizations, because I'm an individual with my own stuff, and I don't like other people taking responsibility for my actions. I like to take responsibility for my actions, and I don't like other people telling me what actions I can and can't take, or punishing me for actions that I have taken that are wrong. For instance, mate, I punish myself with guilt and remorse, and honesty. But what I've seen is kind of like, do you feel that there's a need by criminal elements within government, banking, etc., to infiltrate secret societies like Freemasonry and many other branches of this in order to perhaps gain more power and use the secrecy for something that it wasn't intended for? It was, I believe, I think, according to my recollection, the intention behind the whole secrecy is, well, you don't actually have to worry when you go in there that people are going to, like, spill your beans and things like that when you go out. You can talk about things that you want with the comfort of knowing that your secrets will be kept, and you can say what you really think. Or at least that's how I'd run an organization of such a nature. I'm not sure what the original inception for the secrecy was.
Well, a lot of the secrecy is just the ritual. I mean, if a Masonic lodge, if you walked into my Masonic lodge during a Masonic lodge meeting and commit and confess to a crime, they'd probably call 9/11. No one in a Masonic lodge is going to confess crimes or anything like that. A lot of the secret, I mean, it's just, you know, an informal meeting, basically. A lot of the stuff that is secret is the rituals, the handshakes, the passwords, and the morality lesson that it's trying to keep or trying to teach is to keep your word. That's, in the end of the day, what it's trying to teach and the reason for the secrecy. The truth be told, you can find all this out on Google anyway. I mean, I guarantee you, and I know I've seen it. I mean, if you want to go see what a Masonic ritual looks like, I know this stuff is online. You can find these monitors that will detail the ritual, how, where to stand, how to, you know, how to prepare the candidate, where this guy sits, where that guy sits, what he says, what this guy says. This is all online. I guess with Freemasonry, when it's developed, it becomes very popular and it attracts a lot of people of influence to it. I think it's more of a situation where the teachings and morality lessons of Freemasonry can influence a person, and especially a person in power. But I guess people could join it. But I don't know if they'd be joining it to gain, some sort of, a power of some kind. The Masonic Lodge, by and large, would disencourage, any sort of, criminal activity going on in the lodge. I mean, unless you have a lodge of nothing but criminals, then I guess, you may be able to get away with it. But, I know in the lodge I'm in that, in all the meetings I've gone into, and both, in my Blue Lodge and at the Scottish Rite, I've never heard any sort of nefarious plans, being talked about or anything like that.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the segment and we have to go. But it occurs to me that with a branch as wide as Freemasonry, there's currently a million plus members worldwide, and there's thousands upon thousands of different lodges with different lodge masters. You can't put everybody in the same kettle of fish. You can't put them all in the same basket, can you? Because everybody's different, just as different as humans are. They just happen to belong to a club with the same nomenclature and profound fondness of symbolism.
I totally agree with you. I mean, just to wrap up real quick, I mean, Freemasonry has had some dark characters involved with it. Aleister Crowley comes to mind. There was a Freemason in the early 1920s named Charles Ledbetter, who, I mean, again, to be fair and balanced about this, he was a Freemason. He wrote several books about Freemasonry, and by and large was a pedophile. So, I mean, you cannot condemn all Freemasons for some hiccups here and there.
Thank you very much, Robert Sullivan, ladies and gentlemen. His website is robertwsullivaniv.com. That's robertwsullivaniv.com. Go there and check out his book today. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly irradiated, but we don't know because I stopped testing for it. And my very special guest is, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce her name. I know her last name is Young, and her first name is either Kyra or Kira. Welcome
it's
to the show.
It's Kira.
Oh, yeah, okay. Thanks. Like Knightley.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Except she's
but with
an
I instead of a Y.
Now, speaking of which, I wanted to think a little bit deeper here, because we were talking off air just before about psychopathy and whatnot, and my goodness, what a timely discussion.
Yeah.
I just this morning, in fact, was reminded of this scumbag who stole videos off me and threatened me and intimidated me and things like that. This is like way back in the day, like 2010 or something like that. But he's back and he's uploading my videos again. Son of a wench.
Mm.
And so I just posted up all these videos about him assaulting us.
Wow.
And, you know, it kind of puts things into perspective when somebody's trying to tell you, oh, I want everybody to be free, I want to set up sovereignty, etc. You know, here's your claim of right, and we're going to get your birth certificate back. Meanwhile, there's a video out there of him assaulting people who are trying to ask him simple questions.
Right.
Yeah. And see, this is how you deal with psychopaths in a way to actually expose them. But what's problematic is that if you expose them, they know that you're doing it, and they come and frack up your life.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that is the quandary, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the way that I deal with that is I teach people how to see it for themselves. You know, how to tell if the people they're dealing with in their lives are psychopaths or not. That way, and I can speak in general terms and give the people who listen to my show their own tools to do that for themselves. And then, so I don't have all the psychopaths, you know, all of them coming. I'll have to a few, but not as many as I could, you know. So that's how I do it. That's my form of insurgency.
Yeah, yeah.
Against the psychopath charge.
Well, have you noticed that this is actually a... I think I've actually encapsulated what this battle is. I've been trying to figure out who's on the bad side and who's on the good side and who's in between. Mm-hmm. And it's the people that are in between. It's the psychopaths that are on the bad side, and it's the people exposing the psychopaths that are on the good side, more or less. They're sort of like the source, you know, from which all scumbaggery flows forth. Kind of like the... John Kerry and the Heinz Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're all about the source.
I know some people that's all they'll consume.
They'll only consume, like, tomato sauce?
Well, just Heinz. If they're having tomato sauce or ketchup or whatever, it has to be Heinz.
All right. What did the... what was it? There was a good joke about this. In fact, I think it might have been on Kill Bill or something like that. There's a mummy tomato, a daddy tomato, and a baby tomato. And the baby tomato, they were walking down the street. The baby tomato starts lagging behind, and daddy tomato goes back there and squishes him, and he goes, "Catch up."
I think I've actually seen that before. Recently.
Where was it
weird.
From? I forget which movie it was.
I don't know.
It matters not.
I don't pay attention enough to know.
Okay.
It's background.
Well, I think that's it's kind of like the way I live my life as well. It's just kind of, does it really matter? No? No. Okay. Frack it then. Too hard basket. Now, talking about your show, I'd like you to actually plug your website and services and whatnot.
Okay. Well, my show is called The Bridge with Kira. It's on the Type 1 Radio Network, which is a blog talk radio show. And Swami Shivananda Giri is my producer. And I'm on Sundays from 2 to 4 Eastern and 7 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. And basically, it's a meeting place. It's a meeting of minds. I usually interview someone for 2 hours about what they're doing, either an activist or a musician or a writer, a thinker, an artist, and, you know, give people a voice who should be heard. So coming up this coming Sunday, I'm going to have Ted Torbich on, and that's going to be really fun. I really love his rants, and I really get into the way he thinks and his work. So, and I'm going to tell him my UFO experience, which I've never told publicly before.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we can't get a sneak preview of it now, then, eh?
No. Well, I will say this one thing, because when Suzanne Posel was on my show, she talked about the electric universe theory. And now that I've looked into that a little bit, I think this UFO experience has something to do with that. So I will put that out there. But you'll have to listen to my show to hear the story. And it happened in 1998 in Oakland, California. And I was not the only one there. And I was not on drugs. And my website.
That's very strange for a person in Oakland, California, to not be on drugs.
I mean, true,
what else is there to do in Oakland? I heard that one guy actually got lost in the airport, and it said like, now boarding for Auckland, and he's like, okay, like he thought it was weird that he was flying to Auckland, but he jumped
Oakland's
on the plane.
Actually, a beautiful city.
Yeah, and then he wound up in New Zealand because the announcer actually had an accent and was pronouncing Auckland. New Zealand.
Oh my God. Oh, I heard about that. Yes.
Yeah. But it was too late, you know. The plane had already taken off. He was just kind of like stuck there for
I didn't realize those were the two cities, though. Oh, that's terrible for him. Yes, I did hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
That must have sucked.
Wow.
Although,
you know, he went on a...
It may have come as a pleasant surprise to him. Hey, I'm not in Oakland.
Yeah. It's not that bad, man. Oakland was one of the first places to do medical marijuana and got its nickname 15 years ago as Oaksterdam because they had a bulldog and all the other types of, you know, places that they have in Amsterdam. They had them in Oakland 15 years ago for people who need it for medical purposes, which is most of the planet.
Yeah.
If you're not hurting...
Most of the planet need it for medical purposes, and the rest of the planet need it for recreational purposes.
Right. And who cares what the hell people do? I mean, it's not a crime. It's been criminalized, but it doesn't mean that that's a crime. Nobody's harming anyone. It's not a crime. And that should be changed. And it is. It's in the process of changing. People are waking up. People are like, oh, wow. The data doesn't support your bullshit. So people shouldn't lose their kids and homes over that.
How about that? Law based on stuff that actually is real and is measurable as opposed to massive amounts of propaganda, just convincing you of something that's simply not true for no real good reason.
Mm-hmm. When I was in college, this was the early 90s, I met a guy named Jack Arar. And I had read his book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And, in my college, it was mandatory that you take environmental science. So I took that class and then we had a project at the end, you know, save the world. Like, what would you do given the data that they told us about, you know, global warming and crap? And the solution was industrial hemp. Not even marijuana, but if you need it for medicine, that too, but. The only reason it was made illegal is to make hemp illegal, which has industrial value, food, fuel, paper, fiber, and cannabis is medicine. So all of those industries that would be not have the control that they have over the world right now, if it's made illegal. So they'll try to figure out a way to, you know, co-opt its slow legalization. And they'll probably GMO it and fuck it up because that's how they operate. But
it's more like taking control of things because when somebody told me, oh, they made hemp illegal just for the industrial usage, and other people say, oh, they did it for the alcohol and tobacco industry because it's a competition for them, and somebody else goes, no, they're doing it for all the medical things because everybody had medicine in their bag. Another person goes, no, they did it for the cooking industry because almost every single frickin' recipe in a goddamn cookbook in the time of the 30s had frickin' cannabis in it. And then I said, it's kind of like the 9/11 truth movement. There's a number of different working theories. Most of them, they're pretty much all true, and they all happen simultaneously. Right. And it was done that way specifically so that people would fight about what was the real causing factor and what was the real reason endlessly so that they can continue to pull off more shit like this.
Mm-hmm. But yes, it is all of the above. And we do have the evidence. I mean, the DuPonts, they have the patent for nylon. So they did not want for people to be able to continue to use hemp for fiber. They wanted to take over that fiber market. And, you know, and it's the same with agrochemicals, petrochemicals, you know, cotton. They wanted cotton to be the industry. And so, you know, they don't want you making clothes out of hemp, which lasts like a gazillion times longer, you know, and fuel, paper uses, I mean, making paper out of trees is killing the planet, but you can make so much more paper out of hemp with, you know, without having to kill the planet. So yeah, it's all of the above. Absolutely.
Mm. And
it'll be interesting to see how the whole cancer, because people are like, we're tired of your chemotherapy with your, you know, 2% success rate. Chemotherapy is killing people. It's not. So why are they still using it?
Well, I think we need to educate children about it.
Majority of the people.
At the end of the day, the New World Order's figured out that if you brainwash one institution, then they'll wind up convincing all the subsequent generations of the status quo. So, I don't know, maybe if we just taught children in school and whatnot that cannabis has all these healing properties, all these industrial capacities, etc., and the reasons why it was made illegal to drive out the competition, etc., then I think within a generation it'd be legal and they'd continue to repeat and parrot that truth, ironically enough, down through the generations.
Yeah, well, I've seen a lot of movement since, you know, 1990 to now. There's been huge movement. You know, and for a while it just seemed like, I mean, you think about the 60s and every movement was derailed by Countel Pro and the CIA bringing all kinds of fucking drugs in to derail people and get them, you know, off on a trip instead of doing what they needed to do to change things the way they really wanted to change things. So, you know, I didn't think it would ever change, because when I was talking to people in the 90s about this, they were like, you're fucking crazy. You are absolutely fucking insane. I'm like, no, I'm not. This is the truth. And I told people, like, in my first husband was British, and I told people in England when they were like, oh, we know what you're going over to Amsterdam for. And I was like, you will see it decriminalized in my lifetime, because the facts do not back it up, what they're doing. So
well,
the truth
I don't know, I don't know about you.
Sometimes it just takes a long time.
Yeah, it kind of takes a while for it to sink in, and it's just like that with everything. It's just the more you're exposed to it, the more it's repeated blatantly in front of you, the more inclined you are to believe it. It works for the truth as well as for lies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and vegetables with children. That's how you make them like vegetables, is you just keep giving it to them until they eat it. Yeah.
Yeah, you are what you eat. I'm a vegetable. I can't move. Why, bro? What happened to you? Too much Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts. They're like those tiny cabbage things. That's what my son calls them.
Yeah.
Can I have some more of those tiny cabbage things, please?
Yeah.
Smothered in butter.
Motherly smothered in
That's
butter.
That's another way. That's another mommy trick right there.
Oh, yeah.
Butter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, I saw this dude on, it was either Oprah or Ellen or something, one of those talk shows back in the day when I had a TV, and he tried all these hundreds of different health tips. You know how there's like all this health tip, like lose weight doing this, that, and the other, and there's like hundreds of different like little things that you can do? Well, he decided that mm-hmm. he would take a year off work and write a book about trying every single one of them. And one of the things that I found was particularly interesting was how to get people to eat vegetables when they're previously used to a high sugar, high fructose diet. And he said, what you do is when you're steaming your vegetables or you're cooking them or roasting them or anything like that, you just sprinkle like a teaspoon or a tablespoon, depending how much you're cooking, of brown sugar over it. And then what happens is the taste buds start to think that what they're eating isn't like, you know, ooh, yuck, vegetables. It starts to think, they're actually quite tasty and sugary. And then after a few meals or so, they found that you actually gain a taste for the vegetable itself, and you completely forget about the sugar, and then you can stop putting it in.
Mm. Well, I didn't have that problem. I was fed vegetables, like, my whole life. My mother as I got older and older, her garden got bigger and bigger, and she's got a farm now. So I always ate vegetables. And my mother is a Southern cooker, and Southern cooking is like you have your meat, and then you have your 10 vegetables that you picked from the garden. It's country Southern. So I didn't have that problem, and that's how I've been doing it with my son as well, just from the beginning, just giving it to him. But that's a good trick. If I get someone stubborn that won't eat my vegetables, I'm going to do that.
Mm. And also another one that you found out with sweetness, when you taste it in your mouth, your body automatically gears up for the reception of it. So he's found that you can actually lose weight by gargling sugary sports water and then spitting it out.
Interesting. Oh, because your body makes everything to burn it off. And
yeah, your body thinks, oh my God, a whole bunch of sugar and energy are on its way. And then it starts going into hyperdrive, just, you know, preparing for it. And if it doesn't come,
right,
then it's burnt calories unnecessarily. And all you've done is gargle and trick your body into thinking that there's something sweet on the way.
Yeah.
Sort of like in the same way Barack Obama does to the American people.
Right. Exactly. Here's a bunch of promises I'm never going to keep. Vote for me.
Can you remember in your lifetime a single president that kind of delivered on all his promises or any of them, for that matter?
No. No.
I can't remember the prime minister doing
it. Why did we think it was different
this
time? Yeah. You know, why did we think it was different this time?
Because he was black.
Right. You know, I was hopeful, man. I had that hopey changey
I heard that was an Indian tribe that got wiped out.
Let's hope not.
Let's
but
hope
yeah,
not.
I had it. Let's hope he not. Yeah.
But that was it, basically. You look at a country and you're like, man, I'm really fed up with the elections and whatnot. All these old white guys always getting elected and always breaking their profit.
Exactly.
Oh, my God, here's a relatively young black guy. Surely this is different. Surely. No.
Seems legit, right?
Yeah.
No, and I don't think that he's a psychopath. I think he's a puppet. I think he, you know, anybody who gets into that has to, you know, have made a deal with the devil to get there. So, yeah.
Well,
they'll do it again with Hillary. They'll do the same thing. It'll be replace black dude with woman. You know, they'll play the same trick on us.
Yeah.
But I'm not falling for it this time. I am not.
Well, maybe the difference between you and the rest of your American brethren is that you remember what was said, what was promised.
I do.
Okay?
I do.
Other people, I actually was arguing with some people in New Zealand. New Zealanders love Barack Obama. It's ridiculous. You see Barack Obama 08 bumper stickers on cars in New Zealand's driving around sometimes.
Seriously?
I'm not kidding.
That's bizarre.
The dude is a worldwide globalist government kingpin, philanthropist, freaking god as far as people are concerned. And they don't know anything at all that he's done or hasn't done. They know nothing. I had an argument with a dude who's like a student in training at a university or something like that, you know. Typical, I know everything because I haven't had any life experience or ever had a job or been able to think to myself because I've always been in an institution my entire life of people telling me what to say and how to say it and how to get good grades. And so he's arguing with me about the great things Barack Obama has done and the great laws that he's passed. I asked him, hold on a second, great laws that he's passed, name me one that he passed. And he's like, See, you can't even name a single thing that he's done. The only thing that you remember about Barack Obama is, oh, hope, oh, change, oh, he won the election, wasn't that great. Therefore, everything he's done since then and subsequently has been great by proxy, right? Even if he's signed documents that allow Americans to be executed overseas without trial, allowed indefinite detention, appointed himself a dictator, or, you know, all of these things. None of these people have any idea.
Yeah, and, you know, well, in America, everybody knows that Obamacare is his big baby and what he was doing. And, you know, the fatal flaw with Obamacare is that insurance companies are the fucking problem. They're the ones that drive the price of healthcare up so high that, you know, we can't afford it. And we get the worst outcomes and we pay the most for it. So he kept insurance in the picture.
Well, that's because the insurance companies, well, that's because the insurance companies wrote the Obamacare Act.
Right. Right. Exactly. And you know, the corporations do write their own bills. That's how it works. You know, that's how slavery works today, is corporations are running the show. The government can be the big enemy, but they're not really, you know, the ones calling the shots. It's actually corporations that are calling the shots, and the government is the big shield of the corporation. So,
well, the government ensures that corporations can have a monopoly, because corporations can't just, you know, Vinnie Eastwood monopoly. I'm going to monopolize all TV and radio in this country. It's going to be all Vinnie all the time. I can't do that. You know why?
Right.
Because I don't have the government with guns in my back pocket.
Right. Right. You're not Jimmy Savile, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You don't have royalty and government backup.
Although.
And corporate backup.
An Albany all the time media blackout. Man, that'd be so funny.
That would be hilarious. We would want to see it.
Yeah, it'd be like on They Live, you know, when they hack into the TV series and everything and give everybody a headache because they're too used to being frickin' brainwashed by a manipulative signal and whatnot, that as soon as somebody starts speaking the truth to them, it makes them sick and upset.
Right. Well, that is the truth. I mean, that is the way most people are. They just cannot handle it, because it's a lot to really, you know, fully take in and just be like, holy shit, you know? So, yeah, I mean, most people are, that's truth right there. Most people cannot deal with it, because it's a lot to deal with.
And if you want to get more of Kira's truth there, would you please check out your website for the listening audience?
Oh, my, it is kyoung4.wordpress.com. It's called Psychopaths in Charge. That is my blog, and I have a like page on Facebook for my radio show, and it's called The Bridge with Kira.
All right. Thank you very much, Kira, for joining us today, and thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll be right back just after the break. Make sure you go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Now, we're looking for listeners to support the show by either donating once off or starting up an automatic payment, either with your credit card through the PayPal, or if you are a New Zealand listener, there's a KiwiBank bank account there as well. And if you want to send me cash or something like that, usually you just enclose it in a birthday card, just email me, I'll give you my home address and all of that jazz. Plus, we've got a number of Wii sponsors on the homepage. These are basically just listeners like you who just saw that me in trouble one day and just thought, man, I'm going to show up and give Vinny a bit of coin to keep his operation running. So check all those on as well. The High Tea Cafe, Ditch the Can, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen and Wagga Wagga, Volcania Coffee. There's a couple of books on there, The Range of Illusion by Brian E. Holmes, and The Crowdfunding Revolution as well. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.